America leads the world in medicine development. It matters. We get new medicines first, nearly 3 years faster. 5 million Americans go to work because we make medicines here at home. And not relying on other countries keeps us safe. But China is racing to overtake us. Will we let them, or will we choose to stay ahead? When America leads, America cures. Let's tell Washington to keep us in the lead.
Learn how at americacures.com. Paid for by Pharma.
Hello, everybody, and welcome in to the 2024 year-end Inside Boxing Live Spectacular. I am Dan Canobio, your host and my co-host with the most, Mr. Chris Algieri. How are you feeling, Chris? What a year it has been for us. Us, mostly.
Just us. Well, you said year-end spectacular. I am feeling spectacular. And yes, this has been a fantastic year, not only for us, definitely for us, but for boxing. It's been, man, we're on a good run right now. Let's not jinx it, but I remember our first year together, which is feels like a million years ago, but it wasn't. We had a little bit of a rough go, but then our second year, phenomenal. We took off. Boxing was alive and well. This year is even better. I just think I'm praying that we ride right into 2025 the same way. But right now, I'm riding high, feeling spectacular.
Yeah, what a year. If you think about it, kind of a little up and down, though, because that's what boxing will do. When you don't have a schedule, you're going to have some big months, some slow months. If one fight falls out, if one fighter gets suspended, yeah, I'm looking at you, Ryan Garcia, who will be a big part of this year-end award show, then you're missing kind of a big fight at the end of the year. Saudi Arabia, a lot of fights over there. So it was a good year. I'm not going to complain about this year at all, but it felt like if it could have been distributed better, if there was like a commissioner, like with Dana White, he's like, no, I'm not going to put that fight, like those fights back to back. I'm going to spread them out because this is a business. Like, that's my only gripe with 2024, because we got a lot of undisputed fights. We got heavyweight champs. We got the heavyweight division resurging. We had fights in every division, compelling fights. But I just wish it was a little more spread out, because I felt like towards like after September, it was like kind of hard to find a big one besides Better Be Bivol.
I mean, Usyk Fury, you know.
Yeah, what am I complaining about? Stop it.
I don't know, dude. As you were going, what is this guy doing? Like, come on. I just talked about how we had a really, you know, funky year the first year, and then we were riding high. No, we're good, man. Boxing.
Yeah,
great,
I'm sorry,
this year.
Everybody. Let me start this over. What a year, guys!
What a year! We're here. What a year! We made it.
Something wrong. I feel like every boxing fan ever in this world.
You know what
it
is?
Listening,
you're a pessimist, Dan. You've been turned pessimistic by boxing. You're jaded.
I usually am not optimistic, Dan. I don't know. Well, we're going to point out all the positives. This is a positive show. That's why people love this show. If you are watching on YouTube, you can see us decked out in our tuxedos. It is a tradition. If you're listening on iTunes, go over to YouTube. Subscribe to the YouTube channel. I set off some lofty goals at the beginning of the year. Wanted to reach 40,000 subscribers. I think we're at like 33. Okay. You know, I set out some goals for this year, like on a personal note from our brand, and we smashed a lot of those. So I'd like to see more subscribers. I'd like to see more feedback from the listeners at home. But on this episode, we're going to talk about some storylines of 2024. We have our awards. Thank you to everyone that voted on our awards. Awesome.
A bunch of people,
awesome,
apparently. I'm told by analytics. It tells me that we had a tremendous amount of people.
The analytics department has weighed in. Yes, a very good amount. That's how you can see the show is growing, because we had a lot more voters this year than we did than last year. And we're going to talk about some predictions and some big fights that are scheduled for early next year and all that good jazz. Is there anything we should get out of the way before we get into awards? Is there any news? Like, I think, was it Teofimo Lopez? We haven't done a show in a week. Teofimo Lopez potentially fighting Subriel Matias,
yeah, I like that fight. This is one. If you remember, Dan, I think I talked about this. I'm like, yeah, if I'm Teofimo Lopez, I'm going right for that guy. And that was before, obviously, he was upset by Liam Paro. But he's a bit of a dragon slayer, is Teofimo. He will fight the guys that people don't want to fight. And I don't just mean the top guys of the division. I mean just like the spoilers, like the Jermaine Ortizes of the world. Like, it's just like, that's a tough fight. You know, I'm not going to get credit for it. He fights him. And I think this is a different fight. Well, actually, again, he's not going to get credit for it, because he goes out there and he beats that guy. Then, he's wow, I just had my light just blew up.
What the hell just happened?
my ring light literally just popped.
Is that a bad omen for the year?
No, I don't think so. I think it's a good thing. I think we're going out with a bang.
The show must go on.
It's we're going good. Out with a bang, baby. All right, we're good.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that once again, he's not going to get credit because, you know, Matias was beaten by Paro. And now he's just got a dangerous guy in front of him that he needs to get past. But yeah.
I like the fight. I like the fight a lot. It's not like the right order, I feel like. I feel like, Matias did lose to Paro and he kind of got exposed a little bit, but he came back with a win earlier this year. He's still dangerous. Most importantly, it's going to be a really exciting fight. If you look at the styles, mm-hmm. you have Matias who just comes forward. He's going to take two to land one. And that's obviously, as we know, is the best style to fight Teofimo Lopez. So it should be a fun, pleasing fight. I don't think Matias is damaged enough in terms of his reputation or physically where it's not going to be, where it won't be like a stinker. You know what I mean? It's still going to be a really good fight. Do I wish it was Devin Haney? Yes. Do I wish it was Boots Ennis? Yes. Will we get those at the end of next year? Hopefully. Ryan Garcia and Teofimo Lopez. I mean, I know Tio's looking for a big fight, and I think they went down the list, and maybe the third or fourth option was Subriel Matias. It's not been finalized by any means. Coppinger reported on it. He's usually on the money. Dan Rafael did his usual, well, I just texted someone at Top Rank and they said, not so fast. This fight ain't done. And then it ends up getting announced. Right. And then I never see Dan Rafael say, oh, you know what? Coppinger was right. So that's just a little...
That's hell will freeze over when that happens. But
yeah, those two hate each other. But this is about love, guys. This is a loving episode. Let's get into the year that was 2024. Some storylines I like to throw out. The first thing that comes to mind, Chris, I wonder if you agree with me, for 2024 is the heavyweight division shined.
Resurgence.
The heavyweight division got its groove back. And it had a lot to do with Saudi Arabia. Actually, it had everything to do with Saudi Arabia.
Everything, yep.
There wasn't a big heavyweight fight in the U.S., which I'm not a historian, but I'm sure someone can find it. It's got to be the first time in ever. First time in a long time that there wasn't a major U.S. Heavyweight fight on U.S. soil. They all took place in Saudi Arabia or in the U.K. But we got our first undisputed champion in over 20 years when Usyk took down Fury in May. That was an all-time fight with an all-time round. It crossed over into regular sports. It was on SportsCenter. That was a big moment for boxing. We saw a new champion emerge in Daniel Dubois. 90K at Wembley Stadium. That felt like the passing of the guard when he knocked out Anthony Joshua. So an old champion exit stage left, Deontay Wilder, Joseph Parker, Martin Bacoli, Zhilhai Zhang, Fabio Wardley, Ajit Caballel, Moses Atuma, all had memorable wins, and they're going to factor into the division in a very big way in 2025. But all else, above all, this was the year of Usyk. This was the year of the heavyweight. Two huge wins for Usyk, undisputed. He is the guy. But I think overall, the biggest storyline is the heavyweight division got back on the map in a very big way.
Yeah, and you know, there's that old saying, you know, the health of the sport relies on the health of the heavyweight division. The heavyweight division has been strong. And not only have we been getting the top flight guys, you know, the Furies and the Usyks fighting each other, and apparently Anthony Joshua and now Daniel Dubois is one of these top flight guys now. We're also getting, you know, the Zhilhai Zhangs of the world who will take a loss here and there, you know, loses to Joseph Parker, but comes back to blast out Deontay Wilder, who used to be one of the top of division guys. So you're seeing the water's churning. So we're seeing some fresh faces or some guys who are getting second chances who are able to take another crack at it. Because dude, when it's heavyweight, man, it's one punch and you're back in the mix and you're back in fighting for a world title. So it's been really good for the sport. What the Saudi prince has done, what Turki Alsheikh has done, what Riyadh season has done for these guys, just allowing them for an opportunity to fight. Because, dude, I bring it up all the time. There was 18 months where there was no heavyweights fighting like across the world. And guys are not willing to risk, you know, fighting each other because the money wasn't there. Well, the money's there, and now the guys are fighting. So I'm extremely happy about that.
Yeah, it was just movement. Like, movement's the biggest thing. Like, we're seeing someone like Joseph Parker. One of my favorite sayings in boxing is meritocracy doesn't exist, right? So in boxing, you're very rarely are you rewarded for wins. You're very rarely
risks.
Does taking risks. And very rarely does the right guy get the title shot by working his way up. But with this de facto league that we have in Riyadh with the heavyweights, someone like Joseph Parker goes and upsets Zhi Lai Zhang. And then what was his other win this year?
No, he beat Deontay Wilder first, and then he beat Zhi Lai Zhang.
Okay, so he beats Wilder and Zhang. I'm not saying that though, that should automatically give you a title shot, but it should. You know, it should get you into the discussion.
Well,
and it did.
Yeah.
And you have someone in Daniel Dubois who, this doesn't really go to my argument too much, but he goes in and he beats Anthony Joshua, gets that shot. Yeah, it does. It gets that shot, and he makes the most of it, taking a risk, like you said, Chris, 90K at Wembley, rises to the occasion, knocks out Anthony Joshua, which was an upset.
Well, he was fighting Mr. Wembley, so yeah, it was a risk. He was fighting Mr. Wembley. Yeah, absolutely.
I don't care where you think he is in his career, upset. He takes a risk. He gets a part of the heavyweight title. So in years past, this would have been nothing. Would have been nothing. Parker would have been probably just toiling
playing the game. And everyone avoided, stay away from him. Yep.
Playing the game of the mandatory staying in his lane. But now he gets a shot at Dubois. And that's a big 5-on-5 card that's going to highlight the first quarter of 2025. That's the main thing of this Riyadh season and what Turkey is doing over there in Saudi Arabia is like the heavyweight division is starting to make sense. And we're starting to see like, wow, if this sport didn't have so much politics, like, I mean, almost every division could operate like this, where there is like, all right, if you win a fight, big fight, you should get another opportunity. If you get another opportunity, you should get a title shot and so forth and so on. And then we have a healthy division, a healthy sport.
Well, it's funny you mentioned like meritocracy in boxing doesn't work that way. That's exactly how my career went, actually. And it was funny. I was so naive because I didn't know the sport. I had no boxing people around me. I literally came from kickboxing with zero amateur background. I had my kickboxing coaches take me to a world title. And I was just like, I remember telling my promoter at the time, Joe DeGuardia, because he wanted me to fight for some regional title. I was like, I don't care about those titles. I'm going to be a world champion. The only title I care about is a world title. That's all I care about. And that's what he said. He's like, no, we need these for the rankings. I'm like, no, I'm just going to beat everybody until I get a title shot, and I'm going to win that fight, and then I'm going to be world champion. Just like that. I said it just like that in his office, and he like looked at me like, kid, you don't know what the hell you're talking about. But listen, that's exactly what happened. I took a risk. I fought a guy that was ahead of me in line. He was ranked top 4 in the world. I think I was maybe top 30. I beat him. I got the shot for the title. I win the title. That guy was supposed to fight Pacquiao, so then I get the Pacquiao fight. Like, it just, I kept winning and doing what I was supposed to do, and it got me the shots. But I realize in hindsight that that's not how the sport actually works.
It works like in
that
singular.
Time it did.
Exactly. It works in like singular cases. Like the reason why it works so well in this heavyweight division, because it was starting, we're seeing it in multiple cases. Like imagine everyone had your opportunities, but in like the extent of the entire division where all right, you win a fight on Friday Night Fights against Taylor. Right. And then you move on.
Taylor was supposed to fight Prokhorov. I fight Taylor. Right. I beat Taylor. I get the Prokhorov spot. Pagano's supposed to fight Pacquiao. I beat Pacquiao. I beat Prokhorov. I get the Pacquiao fight. Like it just went that way.
Well, we want to see that in boxing more. And it took a entire government in the Middle East to get this done. But we got big fights. And going back to my point where like, yeah, the heavyweight division is so important for boxing. I don't want to be negative again, but I just wish there were some big heavyweight fights here in the States. It's important that we get them done no matter what. I think we've said that numerous times on the show. Usyk Fury had to happen. I don't care where it happened, as long as it happened. It would have been nice to have it in the States. Would it be bringing more awareness? Probably, but it wouldn't have happened. It wouldn't have happened. And we, as boxing fans, you kind of just have to take what you can get. It's kind of crazy that there wasn't a major heavyweight fight in the U.S.
Well, but Dan,
there
was we're in a weird era. We don't have any American heavyweights. Like
none.
Deontay Wilder was like our bastion of hope. And it was for a while, for a long time. We had a lot of big heavyweight fights come over here and it was great. But then we were thinking Jared Anderson's going to be the next guy. And then he gets
kind of ironic. He gets beat down on U.S. soil.
Right. You were mentioning there was no big heavyweight fights. I'm like, yeah, the one big heavyweight hopeful we had got smashed on U.S. soil instead of, you know, fighting over there or getting to the point where he could actually bring these fights over here.
But what a year, though. A guy like Martin Bacoli, who, you know, he wasn't on the minds of boxing fans.
Maybe, he was on one's radar.
Hardcore fans knew who he was, but he gets that opportunity, makes the most of it. You know, you could make a case that he should be getting title shots soon. He should be fighting Zhi Lai Zhang. That's just one example of the movement.
Modern-day George Foreman, this guy now.
Yeah, but let's talk about Wilder. Excuse me, Usyk.
Oh,
my guy.
Are you confused?
What a year! What a year! It was his year, and you know, the heavyweight division was the main focus of 2024, and Alexander Usyk was the main fighter to emerge from that, which is kind of crazy because, you know, you got Tyson Fury, you got Anthony Joshua, you have some of these guys that were big time names in the division for almost a decade. And you have this guy literally coming out of nowhere, doesn't really speak good English, comes from the Ukraine, hops on the scene smaller in the era of the super heavyweight.
He's a cruiserweight, which a division that historically people don't really care about.
Just beautiful, man. This was the Usyk's year, no, without a doubt.
Yeah. No, this is 2024 is the year of Alexander Usyk. There's no question.
Now, what do we think about like some of these other names like in the heavyweight division where, you know, the Fabio Wardleys, the Ejit Caballels, the Moses Atumas should factor. Do they got next? Even though Caballel's 32, I wouldn't put Caballel. Let's say Wardley, Atuma, Jalilov.
Oof.
Do they got next?
I think Jalilov's the future of the division. I think the more recent future, I think the more what's going to happen very, very soon. But in terms of what's coming down the pipe, I think Atuma, man, I really like what I've seen from him. Super explosive, very, very cool, calm and collected at 19 years old. I just hope that he's moved the right way and isn't put out there too soon. But from what I'm seeing from him, his progression been very, very impressive. But Jalilov, dude, that guy's got it all already. He just needs a platform and the opportunity to get out there. I called one of his fights an undercard that was on a dark portion of a top ranked show. And I was like, who the hell is this guy? He fights, he's a heavyweight Dmitry Bivol, except he's got one punch power. And he had an awkward guy in front of him and he iced him, put him down three times in the first round. And I was like, okay, who is this guy? And why are we not seeing this guy on the world stage? Because he's big, he's long, he's strong. Like I said, he's got the in and out like Bivol does. So I think that's the guy next.
Yeah, he should. He get a lot more push. And I think he has that joint deal with Top Rank. I know DiBella had him, still has him. And he's working with Top Rank. So hopefully he gets
I heard he has like four dark promoters. Shows. I heard he's got some Russian promoters.
That's great.
You just mentioned DiBella. That always gums up the works, and we don't see the best guys because of that reason a lot.
You don't want four promoters.
You don't want you listen. Most of the time, you don't want one. two.
I've had
more than a couple, and it's a lot of them are more headaches than anything.
What do they say? If you have two quarterbacks, you have none. If you have four promoters, you have none. That's too many. They're all pulling you in different directions, and they have a lot of their interests instead of yours.
And a lot of your money in their pocket.
Yeah, that's another thing too. I like we're talking about what's next for heavyweights and who's the next heavyweight, I should say, because Usyk's 37. Might get into ages. We're terrible at that. Let's just go off and say that the heavyweight division is old. The top of the heavyweight division is not here for a long time. They're here for a good time. And
they're here for a wealthy time.
Yeah, well, they're in that golden parachute phase. Mm-hmm. Like they're getting their retirement funds. Like Usyk has probably banked $100 million in the last year.
I think he made $100 million for that last one. So he's probably banked
insane, bro.
He's probably banked over $150 million. Oof.
What a life. He says did you catch some of the other posts by neighbors? Says he wants to go home, shut his phone off, put his hands up behind his head, look at the trees outside, watch them grow. And just chill. I was like, wow.
I love that guy. I love this guy.
He goes, I don't want to hear about Fury. I don't want to hear about Dubois. I don't want to hear about any of those guys. I'm done. I just want to take a rest. And he deserves it because, you know, it's part of boxing you don't really think about if you're a fan. Maybe you do. But, like, two fights, one postponement. This guy was basically training the entire year. Not that anyone's going to, like, play, you know, feel bad for the guy because he's made $100 million. But he was away from his family. They are human beings. Like, you guys are humans. So he spent a majority of this year away in training, in solitude.
I love the way that he responded to that, though, because I remember when I was fighting, I went a big fight, and like the immediate question is like, what's next? I'm like, shut up, dude. I'm going to go home and chill. I'm going to go home and count my money. I'm going to lay down. I'm going to exactly shut my phone off, put my arms behind my head, and watch the grass grow, because that's what you want to do at that time. But the media members, guys like you, and now guys like me, always want to know what's next. And for him to come out and say that, I love that. He's just such a likable guy, aside from being extremely weird and awkward when he does his interviews. He's very likable with the stuff that he comes out with. And you can tell, man, there's a lot going on behind those crazy eyes of his.
Well, in his case, it wasn't media asking him. It was Daniel Dubois crashing his post-fight interview.
That was so
kind of inserting himself into the discussion.
Super disrespectful. Do you think we get that fight? I get it, but it's super disrespectful. It depends on Usyk. You know, that night but like he doesn't have to do that. That's entirely up to him. But I think if he's smart, that is the fight.
What is the big heavyweight fight of 2025?
Yeah, it's going to be Joshua Fury Joshua. That's the big fight of the first half of 2025.
And it's two heavyweights coming off losses.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. It shouldn't matter. They have an incredible storyline, and I think that we're seeing that now, especially with the Riyadh season. We're seeing guys come off losses go right into big fights, and it works out for them. And more people should have that opportunity. Like, when you're fighting the best in the world, you're going to lose. Guys lose, and that's okay. And you know, you go out as long as you lose, in a proper way, and don't just completely fold under pressure or whatever, or just find a way to quit or anything like that. Then yeah, I mean, you fight your fight, and you have a proper fight, and you don't come on the wrong end of the decision. Cool, you shouldn't go to the back of the line necessarily, especially if you're a talented guy, especially in the heavyweight division. So yeah, they both lost. It's still an awesome fight. It's still a lucrative fight, and I've said this before. I think on past shows, I'm like, I think they're just diminished enough that it makes for a good fight once again. Because a year ago, I was like, nah, Fury's going to beat Joshua up. And then now it's like, well, this is actually a fight now.
I'm surprised. A lot of reactions I saw to some of our clips was people think Joshua was completely done because of what Dubois did to him.
I don't necessarily think that's true. And I think, I know you said that in the clip that people were talking about. Like, yeah, he's still a dangerous guy. And to my point, like, yeah, Daniel Dubois is a very powerful puncher. And he came out and he hurt Joshua immediately with a jab. I don't see Tyson having that kind of power. So if Joshua gets through the early rounds and doesn't get hurt or too banged up, then we got a real fight. Because basically the only way you're beating Joshua is knocking him out. Tyson's not that big of a puncher, especially a one-punch guy. So
I will ask this. With Dubois emerging and being on the younger side, and the elders kind of aging out, especially with Usyk. Say Usyk doesn't fight next year. Do you think it's Dubois' division to reign over, and he's going to have to fight off the Bacolis, the Wardleys, the Caballos, the Atumas?
I don't think it's his division, but yes, he has to fight all those guys.
Like, but he's clearly like one step ahead of those
Well,
those
he's got
others.
A championship. He's got a title. Yeah. He's got a title in a weight class that's locked up by Undisputed King. A guy who is on many people's pound for pound number one list. So yes, he's ahead of those guys in the fact that he's already entered the room as being a world champion. But yeah, you're gonna have to defend that title now. And those younger, hungry guys that are coming up, yeah, it's time for their shot. You had yours, and you were the first one to get in the door. But that's a hard place to be. When you're the man, when you come out of nowhere, like everyone's got a target on your back. So he's got to go out there and handle business with those that younger crop, because those guys are not going to get the fight with Usyk. They're not going to get the fight with Tyson or Joshua. So it's up to Dubois to handle that.
Yeah, they're going to start calling him out.
He's only going to call out Usyk. He's only going to call out, you know, to get that big.
I'm saying
fight.
These younger guys are going to start looking at Dubois, because
that's what I mean. He's going to call out the guys above them. They're going to call out him because he's above them. So
if Fury and Joshua are tangled up and they're going to be fighting next year, and Usyk, we don't know if he's coming back. We don't know how many fights he has left in him. Yeah, Dubois is the guy at that point. He's the legitimate guy with. You know, who fought a Joe Joyce, who fought Dubois, who fought Joshua. He didn't win all those, but
he
got in the
ring. If he gets past Parker.
Right. Once again, doing something that I didn't like about Riyadh season, and that was how they would count their chickens before they hatched, and they would kind of curse some fights and kind of get in the way of those big fights. Talking
Parker's
about
a banana peel, dude. Like he
had an awesome year.
Yeah, he had an awesome year. I feel like, you know, he changed his life. I feel like I might be I don't know if I'm making this up. I heard like he's like stopped drinking or something. He made some major life change. And he's been just
well, there's a rumor that he was like a drug trafficker. Maybe he stopped doing that.
Well, I mean, that's I know some boxers who were really good who were drug traffickers. So I don't think it was the drug trafficking. I'm kidding. Okay. I'm kidding.
That worked. He was great at TikToks too during COVID, Parker.
He was fantastic during that. I got a chance to interview him during COVID as well. I think it was based on the popularity that was coming out of those TikToks. What a gem of a guy though. Joseph Parker's the man. Very cool guy.
Speaking of Saudi Arabia, last year's year-end episode, the biggest storyline was the emergence of Saudi Arabia, because that's when we first started hearing of Turki Al-Sheikh. That's when we first started hearing of Saudi Arabia. There were some big fights that happened over there, like Joshua Ruiz 2 in 2019.
Riyadh season wasn't even talked about yet, right? I feel like that was...
It didn't have the name Riyadh season, but like it was starting to be... We saw some fights at the end of 2023. In Saudi Arabia, and some fights were scheduled for early 2024, where we were like, okay, Turkey was on the scene. We realized, all right, this is something to keep an eye on. Like, what is this guy about? What is he?
I feel like
what
Parker Wilder was one of those fights. It was one of those year-end fights.
Did it happen this year or last year?
No, I think it was. I think that was.
I think it was last year.
Yeah, it was late December.
I was going to say we should have put Parker in the Fighter of the Year discussion, but he only fought once this year. So last year, at the end of the year, we were talking about the emergence of Saudi, because there were some fights here and there. Like I said, the Ruiz-Joshua rematch 2019 was in Saudi Arabia, and that was kind of like a one-off. They threw a lot of money at it. They weren't really fully in on boxing yet. But if heavyweight division is storyline one, 1A is the overall emergence and dominance of Saudi Arabia. We're talking huge heavyweight fights, five-on-fives, better be of Bivol, buying stakes in the WBA, buying Ring Magazine, taking over media, taking over literally everything. Like, this was the year of the takeover for Saudi Arabia. Like, we were questioning what was it going to look like in 2024. Well, we saw it. And Saudi Arabia, I don't think, is going anywhere.
No, not going anywhere. This year really established them as a dominant force. And how about the fact that Turkey and Saudi and Riyadh has been able to unify these promoters? And I shouldn't say unify, but we're starting to see unification between some of these promoters. We're starting to see them get on cards together. The 5-on-5, I think, is the coolest thing that has brought to, other than the heavyweight division, I think what Turkey has brought to the sport, the 5-on-5 is my favorite.
I think that was cool.
It's super cool that you're getting these promoters putting up the best of the best, and you're seeing the egos of the promoters come out and be like, well, I want to win every match, so I'm going to give you my best guy. And then we're getting the best of the best fighting each other, the best of a roster. So I that has emerged as other than the heavyweight division, my favorite part of what Riyadh season and Turkey and the Saudis have done. But yeah, now they are completely established now, and all of the big fights are going to be like, all right, well, What's up with Saudi? Are they involved? And if they're not involved, then, you know, how are they getting involved? Because that money is real. And also the platform, you know, getting involved with the zone, like you said, all the other things that, you know, they've established. Yeah, they're here and they're here to stay. They have rooted themselves into the world of boxing, and they're going to be here for a long time.
Yeah, I've heard a rumor that they have a stake in the zone, which would not shock me at all. They are working alongside organizations like the WBA and others. The buying of the Ring Magazine, which happened late this year, is significant in terms of media and all that. Like, Turkey says, I have nothing to do with the Ring Magazine, but he does. It's interesting, but we're getting the biggest fights. And as boxing fans, we were not getting the biggest fights for years. We were getting them, but not on a continuous basis. Like, this 5-on-5 for February 22nd, it's one of the best cards ever. Like, I'm trying to figure out how we're gonna tackle that preview show, because there's five big fights. Like, we're not used to these things, but
it's gonna be a two-hour show.
We're gonna have to like do two shows. I have to do a part one and a part two. This was the year of Saudi Arabia. Next year will probably be the year of Saudi Arabia too. I just don't see an end in sight, because they have endless funds and they're operating a lot of these shows at a loss, pretty much all of them. Maybe the Wembley one made money, because that actually had 100,000 people. I don't think it matters. I don't think it matters at all. And the jury's still out on what effect it will have on boxing and like in the marketplace. But if you're a boxer, this is like the golden era right here to get money. I mean, if you're a fighter, like say, like for instance, Teofimo Lopez, and you're like on the outside looking in, like that's the party. Yeah. The party's in Saudi, and you're kind of like at the door looking like, hey, what's going on in there?
Yeah, but Dan, if you're Teofimo Lopez, you've always been that guy. Like if you,
I just use him as an example.
No,
like,
but
who's the biggest name? Who's the biggest name not fighting in Saudi? That Gervonta. Isn't like Tank Davis. Like Tank is making. He probably would make a lot more in Saudi, but he's making pretty good amount here. Like, use Teofimo for a reason because he's not
making the money. And Naoya Inoue doesn't need Saudi. Gervonta Davis doesn't need Saudi. Canelo Alvarez doesn't need Saudi. Now all of them may end up working with Saudi at some point, but they've all put their heels in the sand and be like, "Nah, we're good," because they can't. But Tio has kind of always been that guy on the outside looking in. Like, yo, why is everybody making so much damn money? I'm fighting the toughest fights. Why is everybody else? Why is Devin Haney making $10 million, you know, fighting in Australia? And I'm sitting here fighting Josh Taylor, you know, in the little room at the Garden for, you know, probably a couple million bucks. Like it's Teofimo's kind of always been that guy. And I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's does he have a manager? Is he managed himself? Is his father?
No, he's managed by David McWhorter. And Split T.
Oh, that's right. That's right, babe. Maybe.
They've done a pretty good job from all things considered.
Yeah, no,
but
he's a fantastic manager as well. It's weird. Maybe it's him. I don't know. I don't know what it is. But he does, or just bad timing. Luck has a lot to do with the sport, especially the stuff that happens behind the scenes. I don't believe so much in luck on fight night. Like you look at a guy like George Kambosos. Like, I don't think he got lucky the night he beat Teofimo Lopez. I thought he fought a fantastic fight and Tio fought a horrible fight. But I think there's a lot of luck involved in negotiating for that fight and everything that went around it in terms of what was going on with Triller and things getting pushed back and purse bids. And just there's more luck, I think, in the negotiating table than there is in a fight.
The stars have to align in terms of in boxing when it comes to like getting opportunities and being with the right promoter. And like, it's crazy. Everything is out of your control, but inside the ring, you have the control and you can't deny that for Kambosos. But with Teofimo, I honestly think it's because it's with Top Rank. Like, Top Rank does a wonderful job of getting you to the point of Teofimo Lopez, getting to the point of Crawford, getting you to the point of any, let's go down the list of stars that they've had, but they don't really make the big fight. They don't really make the mega fight. And, you know, like Devin Haney, you just brought up, fought on Top Rank twice, got on there, beat Kambosos, made a crazy amount of money, and was out. And now he's working with Matchroom and working with him with his own company. He fought Ryan Garcia in arguably the event of the year. So, yeah, Teofimo, my point with the whole, if you're a fighter right now and you're not fighting on Saudi, you're not on Riyadh season, you're kind of like, it's what are you doing? Like, that's where the money's at. That's where the party's at. So I expect... a lot of fighters next year who aren't aligned with Saudi to get on board and want to fight over there or be part of it.
Yeah, but you look at Jared Anderson, who, you know, is
he made
top
a big
ranks.
Mistake.
Exactly. Top Rank. So I'm just being your counterpoint here that he is with Top Rank, was able to fight on a Saudi card, was able to make money that he had never seen before, and it pretty much smashed his career.
Do you know he went against everyone at Top Rank too?
Of course, because I mean, that was a bad fight. That was a bad fight. But when you're flashing seven figures at you and you haven't seen that, you know, and there's a plan. That's the thing with Top Rank. Everything is long term plans. They're not a smash and grab promotion. So they look at this stuff and like, I look at this and they're like, well, let's see how long this lasts. Let's not go and destroy our prospects and the guys that we've put a bunch of money into, because Top Rank does finance guys and they make sure that they're get to a certain level before they really get anywhere. So they're just playing the long game rather than seeing, you know, letting Saudi play out a little bit. Are they going to be here for you? Because last year I didn't know they were going to be here right now.
Oh yeah, they're here.
No, they're here. They're rooted. We said that. So, but you know, again, 8 months ago, a year ago, we were like, I don't know, this might be the. I think one of the predictions we made last year is like we're not going to see, you know, any more of this. The, you know, Turki Alashik involved in boxing, but he's here to stay, and we're going to be dealing with this for a while. So maybe Top Rank changes their tune moving forward.
Yeah, another storyline of this year was the U.S. market shrinking. PBC did 5 events. Top Rank had a nice schedule in the States. Golden Boy had a few here and there. That's the what's going to happen. So if one storyline is Saudi Arabia being dominant, the counter effect of that is the U.S. market's going to suffer a little bit. PBC kind of held it down for a little bit. Canelo fought two times. Tank fought once. He needs to fight more. Ryan and Haney was a probably the fight or event of the year, which happened at Barclays Center. And like you said, zero big heavyweight fights. So it's one thing to keep an eye on. U.S. boxing, it's crazy. Like there's not many big fights on the upcoming schedule. There's not – all the big fights are in Saudi. It's crazy to see that like, Vegas isn't the capital of boxing anymore. It's not the consistent capital because Canelo's fights – I was blown away by the turnout that he still gets for fighting a Munguia and a Berlanga. But consistently, the fight capital of boxing is no longer Las Vegas, and that's wild to me.
That is wild. It's such a change in history. I'm not sure how I feel about it yet, but I'm happy that we're getting the fights. But Vegas, it's Vegas, man. It's Vegas. It's you know, the fight capital of the world. People from all over the world want to fight in Vegas. I don't think that fighters all over the world want to fight in Saudi, and that matters. So, listen, I fought in Garden.
They don't want to, but they will.
But they will, of course, because they want to get the bag. They want to get the opportunity. They want to be on the platform. I understand that, but there's just something, dude. Speaking from a nostalgic person and nostalgic place, you know, fighting in the Garden is a big deal. And fighters from all over this planet want to fight in the Garden. It's not been established. I don't think it ever will be that a fighter wants to fight in what is the arena called? The Kingdom Arena? Or
I have
something?
No idea what the arena's called.
I think it's
the arena's called. We built this last year out of dust.
Yeah, and now we're here. No one wakes up and goes to sleep and dreams of fighting in Saudi. You know, like, this is my dream to fight. No, people dream about fighting in the Mecca of boxing. They dream of fighting in Madison Square Garden. They dream of fighting in Las Vegas at the MGM or Mandalay or wherever, at the T-Mobile. You know, like people
or even Wembley.
Wembley is another one. Absolutely. Absolutely. I was thinking more about in the States, but yeah, absolutely. Right. There are iconic places that fighters dream of. And we can't never forget about fighters' dreams because listen, I'm a fighter. I'm thinking about all this stuff right now. Nostalgia matters. And granted, we're getting these fights. And as fans, yes, I love it. I love it. But as fighters, man, the venue matters. It matters.
I want to put myself in the shoes of boxing fans for a second here. And I think majority of boxing fans just want to see the fights.
Yeah.
Majority of boxing fans. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think majority of boxing fans, they just don't have, they're not fortunate enough to maybe travel to a big fight or go to a lot of big fights. And that sucks, but they're able to watch them. So if they weren't going to the fights to begin with, and they are able to watch a Fury Usyk and watch a Better Bivol and watch a 5-on-5. That's a positive for most boxing fans out there, and that's the overall the main takeaway here. Would I like to see more fights in the States? Yes, we still have Canelo twice next year. We still have Tank, who's fighting in Barclays Center. Ryan Garcia will fight in the U.S. Like he's a ticket seller. Devin Haney, not really a ticket seller, but he's a name here. But I can see all these guys going over to Saudi as well. So we don't know about that. Let's get into the awards. Awards season. It's time for our 2024 Inside Boxing Live year-end awards. Our awards, your picks at home.
Our awards, your votes. Let's
discuss. It's all that good stuff. We'll start from the bottom and work our way up. Prospect of the year. Now, we'll go with we'll reveal our picks, then we'll go with the votes. Prospect of the year, I think it's Abdullah Mason. There's some debate because he got dropped. Does a prospect have to look like a blue chipper? Can you get dropped in that fight twice and still be considered prospect of the year? Yes, because I think he's going to have a long, dominant career. Abdullah Mason is my 2024 prospect of the year.
I'm pulling mine up to make sure that I'm on the right page. But right. Yes, he's mine as well. And man, I saw him get dropped, but also I knew who he was fighting. That's a tough guy. It's a very tough guy. And what I saw was that Abdullah Mason, after getting dropped, did not change the game plan. And I kind of like that. I don't think, you know, I didn't thought it was stupid. I just said, listen, I'm going to get you anyway, bro. Like, I came here to bust you up and finish you. I'm going to do it. Yeah, you caught me. Cool. Whatever. Oh, boom. You caught me again. Okay. All right. You know what? I'm still getting you. his self-belief in that, even though he got rocked, even though he got caught, that he's still going to get the job done. I respect the hell out of that because that takes big balls. And listen, we knew he had skills. We knew he could punch. But you don't know about the chin. You don't know about the balls. And I'll take balls over chin any day. And Abdullah Mason showed that he's got balls. Yeah, maybe his chin is maybe it's suspect. Maybe it's not. Plenty of guys get dropped early. Oscar De La Hoya got dropped early all the time coming up. And look at who he is. And he had one of the best chins in boxing for a very long time. So I'm not gonna completely rank his chin based on that, but I am gonna rank his balls. The kid's got balls. And so for me, that's the prospect of the year.
Chris ranking balls.
I Ball mean ranking. guts, guys. Guts and nuts. Nuts go. And guts as our
bolts.
Our
nuts and bolts.
Nuts and bolts. Nuts and guts.
65% of the votes from our listeners went to Abdullah Mason. We had Emiliano Vargas. We had
love Emiliano, star power for sure, but I got to see more from him against some better opposition.
Yeah, 20% went to Emiliano, 13% went to Kermel Mouton. Denir Pero, who most fight fans don't know, but he's a really good heavyweight coming up.
Fantastic, yeah.
Yeah, he's really good. And there was some talk from some feedback we got. It was like, where's Moses Atuma? Why isn't he in Prospect of the Year? Because I think he's above Prospect of the Year. They're talking about putting him in for like WBA's like interim titles and stuff. Like, yeah. None of those guys that I just named are fighting for interim titles or any of that stuff next year.
Now, Abdullah Mason's the furthest along in terms of the opposition.
But he's still way down.
But still, yeah, absolutely. Still way down there, super young. And Kermel Mouton, he's really way down in terms of experience. That missing weight by like 15 pounds, that's a real red flag. That's a real red flag for me.
And then him blaming the Jersey Commission, you know, saying that the fight, they messed up his blood work and he knew it wasn't going to. That was also a lie, too. And he had to apologize for that. So that was bad.
Yeah, not a good look.
Moment of the year. What is your moment of the year? There was a lot of big moments. Ryan yeah. Garcia, Mike Tyson, Dubois. What was your moment of the year?
My moment of the year was Ryan Garcia, Devin Haney buildup. It was riveting. Like, that was edge of your seat stuff. Ryan looking like he wasn't going to make it to the fight at all. Like, I mean, every press conference, all the drama in the media, the wild things he was saying, you know, talking about like, pedophilia parties in the woods and like all these crazy things that he's saying. We're like, this guy has lost his mind. The weighing in with the fake beer bottle, the missing weight by however many and a half pounds. I mean, all of it. It was so out of control. And then what actually happened on fight night, when it turned out to be actually a very, very good competitive fight with tons of drama. That's definitely the moment of the year for me.
Moment of the year for me as well is Ryan Garcia and Devin Haney buildup. I mean, it was batshit crazy. You thought the fight was going to be canceled numerous times. You thought Ryan Garcia was going to be taken away. You thought you might never see him again. But everyone was captivated by it. I had friends that don't watch boxing hitting me up about it. It ended up being a great fight inside of the ring with knockdowns and drama. The buildup was absurd. Can every buildup be like that? No.
No.
Do I want every builder to be like that? No.
I don't.
Because being so heavily in it and like being a part of it, like we were with PPV.com, like it was, I felt like I was in it too. Like I was living the craziness of Ryan Garcia and it was like, it was just too much. But
yeah,
as we see in boxing, a promotion like that, like too much works.
Too much sells. Too much sells.
It did good business, and like you brought up the crazy stuff that he was talking about on Twitter. Like Ryan Garcia is a marketing genius. Mm-hmm. There's some genius in a lot of the things he said.
He's also crazy like a fox. So yes. I mean, he's also nuts to a degree.
But look, like you're not seeing any of that right now. Like he's completely. I don't know what his like. He's seeked help. He doesn't said he's not drinking as much anymore, but he's not tweeting anymore. He's not saying all this stuff. So was it an act? Was it him having an episode? I don't know what it was, but I'll tell you what, in terms of bringing eyeballs to the sport, which is pretty much kind of the name of the game in terms of like making a lot of money in the sport, is getting people to watch that one night. And for one night and for a month or 8 weeks, everyone was captivated on Ryan Garcia and Devin Haney, but mostly Ryan Garcia ends up knocking him down, getting the win, ends up testing positive for PEDs, gets suspended. I mean, the whole saga just never ended. It went on for months. Well, months.
It produced a ton of content for us. We were covering it, talking about it.
After a while, I was so tired of talking about it.
I know. After the fact, even for Pro Box TV, we tried to get him on. Like, he called us all out, and then he failed at his test. And we were like, all right.
Yeah. He called both of us out.
Yeah. Yeah. And he called everybody.
What did he say? I was on the idiot train. I was on the goofy train.
Goofy train.
Which... I got called out by a lot of fighters this year. Shakur Stevenson.
Yep.
So I wear that as a badge of honor.
Everyone who called you out called me out, though. So I guess that people are watching our show.
Right. We're the top dogs, baby. Yeah, moment of the year. Some of the other... What actually won our vote was Usyk dethroning Fury in the first fight. Yeah. But we're very close. 39% voted for that. 36% voted for Ryan Garcia.
Well, we have real boxing fans. That's what it is. People
I'm happy,
really,
yeah. I'm happy
really...
with that split.
Yeah, I'll take that.
Mike Tyson's butt cheeks.
Wow, that was some additional
15%.
Wow. Wait, you can add your own? What is that? You could just
add it wasn't
your own?
A write-in. Yeah, I had Tyson Jake Paul event, but I don't think anyone's talking about the fight. I think when it comes to the Tyson Paul event, it was the build up, it was the Netflix.
That may have been the most forgettable fight I've ever seen.
The fight was an afterthought. It was mostly about how big can we make this event. And if you're looking at it from an event standpoint, 70,000 at Jerry World, 108 million people watching. I mean, that was a massive crossover event. The world stopped that day or that night to watch that fight. And Mike Tyson stepped into a ring. He said he blacked out after the first round. Didn't remember any of it. All he remembers is Jake bowing to him at the end. That was pretty cool to be a part of it. I mean, I was part of that pretty every step of the way, from the original announcement to the postponement to the re-announcement to fight night and fight week. It was quite the spectacle.
That was another fight I didn't think was going to happen, and it actually panned out.
And it happened. It definitely happened. It was definitely a moment, a big moment of this year was Mike Tyson getting in a ring with Jake Paul.
I don't remember much of it because, as I said, it was very not memorable in terms of the action.
One thing I want to talk, we didn't do a lot of women's votes on here because I just felt like it was so incomplete, but there were some great performances this year from the women. Obviously, Katie Taylor and Amanda Serrano rematch was the women's fight of the year. Mm-hmm. It was, you could put that into the men's category and it would get a lot of, garner a lot of attention and votes. Unbelievable fight. I could watch them fight literally every year for the rest of eternity. They're so good and they're so matched so perfectly and they're just so perfect for each other. So happy to see it.
They're also just head and shoulders above everyone else, like anyone else around them. It's just
and how about
just,
the platform
they belong
they got,
with each other.
Chris?
Yeah,
70
yeah.
million people watching that. Like we were questioning how can this fight get any bigger than the MSG with the sellout and you know the numbers that they did there. Well
I got about 12 million reasons why it could be bigger or how it could be bigger. I mean they made a lot of money.
Yeah, they made a lot of money, and it got a lot of eyeballs, and it was the best-case scenario. The best thing to come out of that night was Amanda Serrano and Katie Taylor getting their just due once again. But Gabrielle Fundora, Caroline Dubois, Scott Nicholson, Michaela Mayer all had big wins this year, probably leaving some out. That Michaela Mayer, Sandy Ryan,
Clarissa Shields winning another world title in a different weight class, going
heavyweight division. Yeah. She's got a movie out right now, which is crazy.
Another big move for a female boxer.
Well, I kind of like forget her, which is like not fair because she's just so dominant.
She has no competition. There's nobody. There's nobody for her.
None, and it's a shame because she's so freaking good. That was the moment of the year. Let's move on to our biggest upset. I mean, this is easy. This is a runaway. 85% of our listeners, Bruno Saras over Jaime Munguia. You were on the call, Chris. Just wrap it up. Like this is the knockout, the upset of the year. The others were Dubois over Joshua, Angelo Leo over Luis Alberto Lopez.
Also, I was on the call for Angelo Leo, Luis Alberto Lopez, by the way.
So, you're just upset. The upsets follow you. You follow the upsets.
I'm on. If there's a knockout of the year or an upset of the year, you're hearing my voice calling it. So
you're the upset whisperer.
Yeah. You don't want me on your card, I guess. You don't want me calling your fight if you're the main event. But yeah, that Saras and Munguia fight, that was so out of nowhere. But for me, man, Angelo Leo, because I was in the room. I wasn't in the room for Saras and Munguia. Like, we were doing it from a studio, unfortunately. ESPN didn't want to cover it. So they had us do it from a studio. So I wasn't in Tijuana when that KO happened. So it's not the same. I don't know, Dan, you know how it is when you're calling fights, when you're on remote or when you're in the room, it's completely different. But that Alberto Lopez, Angel Leo knockout, my God. That the place went nuts because it was in Albuquerque. But yeah, Suras and Mugia, there's no question. That's definitely the upset of the year because it was such a one-sided matchup in terms of on paper. So the fact that came out of it, also he's losing. He got dropped really hard a couple rounds before. No one, he was just kind of waiting. You're just waiting for Mugia to finish him. Hit him with a body shot and then just unload. But more and more you saw Suras just making him, you know, my turn, your turn, my turn, your turn, your turn, my turn. And he's throwing those right hands, getting closer and closer every round. And then finally he lands a peach of a shot. And you just see Mugia's jaw. You could see Mugia's jaw from behind him. The way that thing moved. So, you know, I remember going to the gym on Monday after a fight. And they're like, man, was Mugia really not that good? And I'm like, no, he's definitely good.
Got caught.
Does he not have a chin? I'm like, no, he got hit with a perfect shot. I talked to all the young guys. I'm like, listen, this is why you can't get hit. The best fighters in the world don't get hit. Anybody can knock you out. All they got to do is hit you right. It can happen to anybody. Happened to Mugia. Mugia always had a good chin. Got hit with a guy who can't punch, quote unquote, gets KO'd. It happens, man. Can't get punched. You can't get hit.
Yeah. It's, in terms of odds, it's the biggest upset of the year. I think he was a 15-1 underdog.
And there was no mutterings. There was no like, oh, it might be an upset. Like Leo and Lopez, like people were all in town were like.
That was only plus 350. But yeah. not only, but it was still a great. I'm not taking anything away from Leo. That was a great upset. Suras is a clear runaway winner, big widest winner on out of our votes, 85%. Over to knockout of the year. This one was close too, but 44% of our listeners here have Dubois over Joshua.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. I thought it was going to be between Leo Lopez and Body and Silv.
Body and Silv. Lucas Body over Silv is my knockout of the year. I think it did them like it was. First of all, it was a wicked knockout. The guy Silv was knocked out cold. He was losing every minute of the fight. It changed the trajectory of his life and career after. Mm-hmm. I know that's not really what the award is, the singular knockout, but it was a great knockout. It wasn't like it was there was any better ones out there. But I just put everything in it, and I happen to know Lucas Brody, good dude, and that's mine.
If you clip it, there's no better knockout. If you take just the clip of the punches that end the fight, there's no better knockout.
Especially with Silv, who's recovered and is fine now, but him being outslept. Like Joshua wasn't slept. Like Silv was slept. He was not getting up. He was out cold. 23% have Angelo Leo over Lopez. Tank over Frank Martin with 7%, which was a pretty ferocious knockout in itself. But Daniel Dubois over Joshua, which
is interesting,
potentially be upset of the year in with one punch, and could potentially be a knockout.
Also, could Body and Silv. That could be.
It could be the case that more people watch Dubois Joshua. It could be the case that more of our listeners
could be recency bias as well.
But not a lot of people know who Lucas Body is. They should. He's pretty good. Let's go to fight of the year. There were some great fights this year. The nominees were Usyk and Fury 1. Ryan Garcia and Devin Haney, Ford and Klomatov, and Virgil Ortiz and Sergey Boichuk. And the winner, according to our listeners, Usyk Fury 1. That is my fight of the year. It's very rare that you have all that hype. 20 plus years without an undisputed champion in the heavyweight division. We finally get it. And it lived up to the hype. That ninth round is probably round of the year. Awesome, awesome night. That night was everything. Boxing needed that.
Yeah, no, it had everything. It had first of all, it's a heavyweight division, so of course it gets a tier of its own. And you got the two top guys, both guys undefeated. Tremendous build up, and then they actually knock it out of the park. So that rarely happens. Fantastic fight, definitely runaway fight of the year. But my honorable mention, man, is Ford Kolmatov. That fight, and that's probably a fight that got lost in the sauce a bit. But I mean, for drama. And the way that they were going back and forth all night long, fighting different styles and trying to get the best of each other, both guys going for it. That was an absolutely tremendous, tremendous fight. And for any of our listeners who did not watch that fight, go back and watch it. Ford showed incredible fortitude late in that fight to pull it out. And he
got a buzzer beater.
Yeah, he got a buzzer beater knockout to get
how
the fight.
How often do you get a buzzer beater in boxing? Like, this guy went to the 12th round, and he's like, you need a knockout to win, and he got it with like 10 seconds left.
And he's That's like, yep, I'll do it. Yeah, it's again, if any listeners do not watch that fight, go back and watch it. The drama's off the charts.
Yeah, it's not going to get the attention that Fury Usyk did.
Yeah, it's not going to get the fanfare.
Ortiz Bochuk got second place, 24%.
Really?
Yeah.
Good fight.
Garcia Haney got 20%. Ford Klumbatov got 15% less. That's only because, you know, it was in the middle of summer. It was on the like a second fight of that 5-on-5.
No, it wasn't.
Well?
To my Ford Klumbatov? No,
I'm thinking of Ford Ball.
Yeah, you're thinking of Ford Ball. This was before the Ford Ball fight. I was at this fight as well. This is in Verona, New York.
Oh wow. I was wrong on that. So, yeah, Ford had himself a year.
Yeah, Ford did have himself here. Became a world champion. Fought a great fight against Ball in Riyadh on the 5-on-5. You know, got a hefty paycheck, I'm sure, and went to 130, and good got a win at 130. He had three fights this year, huh?
Good for him. That's crazy. And Ortiz Bochuk in second, which was an awesome fight, a really fun fight. And I've seen some debate now on Twitter between Ortiz and Madrimov on who is going to win that fight. So that's gonna be something fun to talk about.
Tough fight.
Let's go to Fighter of the Year. Final award. This is an easy one.
Another runaway.
Second widest vote in of all of our awards. 85% of our voters, me, I'm sure Chris as well. Alexander Usyk is your 2024 Inside Boxing Live Fighter of the Year. Two wins over Tyson Fury. Two demonstrative wins, and on my cards at least. The year of Usyk, baby.
Yeah, I mean, we said at the top of the show, the year of Usyk. This is another runaway. This guy just had a year, man. He cannot be denied. Cannot deny Alexander Usyk. To beat the man, you got to break him. And that's a hard man to break. He is just a hard, hard man.
He's a hard man. In a way, 7% had two wins. Not enough. Dubois, 5%. Beterbiev, 1.7%. Who Beterbiev did fight twice this year.
Oh, he did fight. He fought Callum Smith. He beat the hell out of Callum Smith. And then he gets the very, very slight victory over Bivol, which I didn't think he won. But
does anyone care about my best bets of 2025?
I do.
Crickets. I put it on Twitter. Best bets of 2025. Tank round 8, because he told me at CVS.
Yes. Well, you can, that's number one.
That's my number one bet of the year. It was like plus 1,500. Beterbiev decision. I had a plus 650. Love that one. Even though he did, I know it was arguable, but I'm not going to sit here and say I won the bet. Leo over Lopez.
Winners don't argue.
No,
winners don't argue.
A lot of my bets take into account bad judging. Leo over Lopez.
Yeah, but also you guys, you got to understand when you are betting boxing, you take into account bad judging. That's part of the deal. It's in the sauce. Like
I took Usyk split decision?
Yes,
because I thought there was going to be one judge out there that was going to give it to Fury, and it was certainly trending there. If Fury had like a decent round 12, we were looking at split decision territory. I parlayed Leo over Lopez and Bochuk Ortiz over. That was a nice one. It's plus 725. And then the Loma stoppage over Kambosos. That's the one I think I'm especially proud of that one, because Loma hadn't got a stoppage in a while. Kambosos is pretty tough, but he did it. And I won. But I also lost a lot of bets this year, guys.
Yeah, but we don't talk about those at the end of the year. We talk about wins.
I'm not afraid to say that I lost some bets. I know Floyd Mayweather only shows you the wins.
Yeah.
He doesn't show you the losses. Didn't show you the millions that he lost. I didn't lose millions. When I go to my DraftKings app, there's
Drake shows his losses. Drake is good. Drake is really good at showing his losses.
Oh, yeah. All Drake has to do is show you his bet. And there, yes, and he loses every single one. The Drake curse lives on.
You just go the opposite of whatever Drake bets in terms of fight
absolutely
sports.
DraftKings has a pretty cool thing where you can like see your year, like it will show you if you're up or down, and I'm up for
that's
the year,
cool,
which not a lot, but I'm up. What a year it was. Those are our awards. Thank you everyone for voting. Really sophisticated listeners we have.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, what else do we want to talk about? Predictions. I have some predictions, Chris, real quick. Top Rank will join DAZN.
That's kind of already been talked about, no?
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it was. This isn't a big prediction here, because they are pretty much on the outs with ESPN, everything I hear. Top Rank will join DAZN, and Canelo will fight Crawford. I'm not going out on the limb here, guys. Those are my two predictions for 2025.
Canelo will fight Crawford. Well, I said last year that my prediction was like we're never going to see Crawford fight again. I was wrong on that one. Prediction's not really my thing. Yeah, I know, but I think he said he's going to fight one more time, but whatever.
Well, there's a chance he doesn't fight. He could have been almost right. He could fight Dreamoff if he doesn't fight Canelo. I mean, who's he going to? I mean, he's just going to take another one of these. I guess he'll just take another one of these 154 guys and take the money, the $10 million or whatever, $12 million. I mean, why wouldn't he? I do think we get Crawford and Canelo. I don't think it happens in May. I think it happens in September. And I'm hoping that it happens in the States because we desperately need it. That's a Vegas fight.
I don't think we see that fight anywhere else except for the States. That's a States fight. I don't think we see that in Wembley. We're definitely going to see it in Wembley. I don't think we see it over in Riyadh. I'm going to predict that we see Fury Joshua not once, but twice.
Oh, wow.
I think we're going to get at least a rematch on that one.
One fight that you have to see in 2025.
One fight that I have to see in 2025.
I've kind of given up on Canelo Benavidez. That was my last year one. I tweeted on January 1st of this year, if we don't get Canelo Benavidez, this year was a failure. A little dramatic. But this year wasn't a failure, and we didn't get that fight. So I'm done with that fight ever like thinking it's going to happen. I've moved on. I've moved on to Tank and Shakur Stevenson.
Nice. Mine is Naoya Inoue and Nakatani.
That is a great one. I think
both of those are excellent.
Nakatani Inoue has to happen. I don't think it's going to happen this year. From what I'm seeing, so Nakatani's got a fight announced.
But if I was putting my Christmas hat on and I was sitting on Santa's lap, that's the one I'm asking for.
I need to see that happen. You show up to the mall.
Santa, all I want to see is Naoya Inoue and Nakatani. That's all I want.
And he's like, what?
What?
Who? Two 118-pound Japanese guys?
Really?
Yeah. I would say it's one and two. I bet you our listeners would agree. Like Shakur and Tank are the two best lightweights. It's a big fight. It's got to happen this year. Tank, you say you want to retire, and you told me in confidence that, and we shared it with the world. Don't retire without fighting Shakur Stevenson. Then you can be a dad.
Like, as much as he's done, I feel like he's got a lot more to do. I mean, he's so talented.
He has so much more to do. Like, so talented. I respect what he said, and he told me that. I want to do therapy. I loved what he said. The fact that he told me that was amazing as some of the interviews fighters, but like selfishly, like, dude, I want to see you fight for like four or five more years. Because like, I think
I don't care how many years he fights for. I just want him to fight some big fights. He's at the point of his career. You talked about that. What did you say? What'd you call it? The parachute,
the golden parachute.
He's in that, man. He can make life changing money. I know he's already done really well, but like he can make career defining fights very easily now. And to be in that position, man, that's a great place to be. And you don't want to see that thrown away.
Exactly. I want to see him in those big fights. Looking ahead, January 24th, Inoue Goodman. February 1st, Benavidez Morel. February 22nd, Beterbiev Bivol 2 card, which is probably one of the best cards ever. March 1st, Tank Roach. May, Canelo versus TBA. So there is something, a lot of stuff to look forward to. I thought it was a great year in all from a personal standpoint. This podcast, we left John Boy Media and we joined PPV.com. That is our presenting sponsor. You know, shout out to them for being a huge support system for us and allowing us to do this show twice a week, sending us to big fights. You know, this was a year that, I took it to the next level in terms of the content, talking to fighters, being at fights, you know, getting on different broadcasts. Like I had an awesome year, and I did it with all you guys listening and everyone watching. So I also enjoyed doing the show with you, Chris. It was a good year. It was a great year for us.
Yeah, fantastic year. Like you said, for everyone listening, you need to understand like how hard that we work, and like boxing doesn't sleep. And I always joke, boxing doesn't sleep, neither do we. It's really true. Like we're constantly, we have our hands in so many different things in order to give you guys the most up-to-date information about this sport that we all love. And it's such a nuanced sport and business. You really have to have your ear to the ground. You got to be talking to people. You got to be on the road. You got to be boots on the ground in order to know what's really going on. And I know more about boxing this year than I ever have any other year of my life, because I'm so involved with it.
Yeah, man.
And it's really cool to be able to share it with all you guys who listen in. And we have the smartest listening base. We have the best people. When you guys do the call-ins, we love doing that. We love hearing you guys.
More of those next year.
It's tremendous. We're doing more of those. Love hearing feedback from you guys. And listen, if you love listening to us as much as we love talking to you guys, tell your friends, tell the people, get those 5-star reviews out there. The more access we have to people, the more people that hear what we're doing, the more resources we are going to have, and we're going to give it back to you guys. So just keep that in mind. Tell your friends.
Tell your friends. Yes, please.
Tell your friends.
And subscribe on YouTube. Leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. Thank you to our listeners, our faithful listeners who watch, who listen every week in, week out. We saw tremendous growth this year with the podcast. Able to travel to big fights. That's not going to change next year. We still have plans to go to all these big PBC fights. Maybe some Wembley fights. Who knows? Maybe we'll be at Joshua and Fury. It's a goal. See that? You hear that? That's there it is.
There it
telling
is.
Us that's it's time to wrap.
That's
New York City sirens are telling us to wrap it up. They don't want to hear any more sappy stuff. Thank you, everyone. Protect yourselves at all times. Keep your hands up at all times. Send us a DM. Leave us a review. Thank you for a wonderful year. We will talk to you in 2025.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.